Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I'm feeling like Joe Rosenstiel this week in that I'm angry about the Apple
TV.
Oh no. It's Joe's
beat.
It's Joe's beat.
I have to say, Joe also commented on the post that I wrote this morning about share photo albums, and his tweet actually it was a toot because it was at Mastodon. He's like, I've never had much luck with shared photo albums, but I'm glad Dan has, which again felt very Joe. But yes, Joe, the Apple TV, he loves it, except he hates it.
Yeah. It's anyway, we'll see. I mean, I wrote a link post, and then Joe wrote a post about it, and we'll see. It's a beta. I think I feel very strongly that we're just at the process now where everybody needs to complain so that Apple goes, we can't get away with this, and puts it back or sets a setting. But anyway, the idea there is that they moved in the tvOS beta, they moved the up next queue, which is literally the only useful part of the Apple TV. They moved it down below the fold of the tab that it's on,
right,
so that you have to scroll past all of their featured junk that is stuff they it's not even, again, this was a conversation that we had in a private Slack that I thought was very informative, which is it's not stuff Apple thinks you'll be interested in. It's literally stuff that somebody at Apple has put in a list in their CMS, you know, their content management system for your region. It has nothing to do with you. It's not personalized in any way. There's no algorithm. It's not helpful. And as Joe pointed out in his piece, it mostly contains stuff he'd seen already. And even when it's a show that you're watching, it doesn't actually say, oh, you're watching this, you can click here for the next episode. It doesn't do that. It's not smart enough to even do that. So, yeah. And we had a whole conversation. There was a chat on Twitter about it. And like, it is this ongoing struggle between pushing discovery of new content versus being able to just watch the show that you want to watch next. And my argument, the short version of my argument is, Apple is a platform owner, not just a streaming service with Apple TV Plus, but the platform owner of Apple TV and tvOS. And this is a platform feature, which is play next thing, show me the next things for me to play, where they pull all the services together, and it needs to be very visible, and throwing discovery on top of it so that you can't even see it until you scroll is user hostile, and they need to do better because they are the platform owner, and this is a feature that spans all the different streaming services. So hopefully they'll change their mind or make it a setting. Like, there's a setting to choose what shows up in the little bubbles when you move over the tvOS or the TV app. You can set whether it's featured or up next in the little bubbles above it.
Yes.
So
yeah, the top shelf. Is that what they call it?
Top shelf.
Top shelf. This is top shelf content right there.
Get a margarita.
And that's the thing I usually use, but I do occasionally find I have to go into the TV app because that gets out of whack. And it's like, oh, you're at 95% of the way through this episode.
Yeah.
I got to mark that as watch. I got to remove something. Yeah. So I do find myself going into the TV app. But yeah, Apple's struggled with the Apple TV, I think is the politest way to put it. And, you know, the revamp of the TV app, it's not the TV Plus app, but
nope.
It's, you know, that's, you know, you could be excused for getting them confused because if you want to access TV Plus content, it's in the TV app, but you don't access all your TV in the TV app.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It is. Well, and it's all a consequence. I was saying this to somebody on Twitter. It's a consequence of Apple. Remember when they said the future of TV is apps, and then they had that moment where they thought, no, the future of TV is the TV app, and they like changed it so when by default when you press the TV button or the home button, it used to be on.
I believe you mean the future of TV is app.
Yeah, is this app one app? It goes to the app, the TV app, instead of to the menu. I changed that setting too, where it goes out to the list of apps. But
same.
I still use the TV app. But by doing that, they sort of created this sort of faux home screen where the idea was you never need to leave the TV app except when you do in order to see stuff. And then they put that into practice where there's like multiple tabs and they're exposing content from all over. And I had an exchange with Dave Nanian on Twitter yesterday, who's like, I don't want to see anything that I'm not subscribed to. And I'm like, all right, well, on one level, I understand that, but on another level, this is basically Apple's conception of this app is it's showing you everything that's available for you to watch across you know, Apple TV. And so they feature stuff like The White Lotus is at the top for season two on HBO Max. It's not an Apple show. They're exposing you to everything. Also, lots of people churn through services. And one of the things that drives that churn is people seeing, oh, that show's back. I didn't know. So I'm not sure Dave's use case is a good use case here. But one of the reasons it's like it, the way it is because Apple, by making the TV app sort of the default on tvOS, they're essentially saying you're probably not going to even go to the app store, right? You're probably not going to go out to apps and go to the app store. So if we want to surface all of the other partners we have where they've got their own streaming services, we have to do it here. Like, this is where we have to do it. So you end up in this situation where they do that. My problem is that the Up Next is a very clear ease of use user feature that I use all the time. In fact, as I said in my little link post, I went into it thinking, and I'm sure we talked about it, that it wasn't going to work because Netflix wasn't in it, because Netflix wasn't playing ball. And it turns out it's so convenient to know that my next episode of the show I am watching is available without needing to know what day it drops or what service it's on is very convenient. So convenient that I forget that things are on Netflix, and it hurts my use of Netflix. Right. It has suppressed my use of Netflix because I don't remember that I was watching Sandman or The Great British Bake Off.
Yep. Yeah, and it doesn't pop up when there's a new season, right? So you forget that it's there. You know, you have to go into the app, and I mean, Netflix likes the idea of it, but this was a game, always a game of chicken, right? It was always a game of chicken with Netflix, like counting on the fact that their brand was so good that you would be living in the Netflix app and scrolling through and seeing other stuff and thinking, oh, I should watch that and I should watch that. But I think, you know, Apple made the bank that, like, okay, we're the platform owners. It's more important that we essentially, you know, are the place where you go and look at stuff and that you don't get distracted by other services. So.
And that, get this, there's user benefit for it, right? Because that was my example, because Lauren and I were talking about this while we were making dinner last night. And I explained to her what was going on. And she's like, what are they doing? Because we do really rely on it. And she, even more than me, and what I said to her is, you know, at 9 o'clock tonight, The Peripheral is going to appear in Up Next. And I said, do you know that The Peripheral comes Thursday nights at 9? She says, no. I said, of course not. And then I said, do you know what streaming service it's on? And she's like, no, why would I need to know that? And I'm like, see, I said, it's Prime Video, but you don't need to know it because when the new episode drops, it just pops up in Up Next. And like, that is user benefit, which is why I think of all the things that Netflix is reconsidering, like putting their ad service, which just dropped and all that, maybe, and on some other boxes, they are integrated into the Up Next, but not on Apple TV. Maybe they should rethink that, because I actually think that it suppresses Netflix views on Apple TV, and Apple TV is not the biggest streaming box, but probably you're probably hurting yourself by not being a part of it. And I don't think that the loss of, like, oh, Apple will know what people are watching on Netflix, I don't think that is enough of a loss to make it worth withholding. But anyway, I find it incredibly useful. And having them try to hide it from me is infuriating, because it's getting it how I use their product completely backwards.
Well, it's fundamentally, I think the issue here is if they put it lower on the screen, essentially that is making it opt in, right? And now they're trying to sort of make it opt out, in the sense that you have to do something positively to move away from that, right? Whereas if I want to find that content, I should have the option to go find it. But shoving it in my face.
Discovery.
Yeah. That's fine. But I want to look for things. Yeah. That's the thing. I don't want somebody popping up, hey, have you watched this? Have you watched this? Have you watched this? And the answer is, as Joe pointed out in several cases,
yes.
Yeah.
You literally know I've watched all of it. Why are you showing it to me? And that's part of my frustration here, is that it's so behind all of this also is that the stuff that Apple's pushing up in their UI, they haven't done a good job implementing the technology, right? That's the frustrating thing. It's like, you know what? You want to do a featured list somewhere? Awesome. Here's what you could do. I mean, we did this at Macworld back in the day. Like, you get a list of featured items, and then you dedupe it, right? Then you because you know whether the user's seen it or not. So then you're like, well, have they seen it all? Well, then I'm going to take it out of the list. And if they are in the middle of it, I'm going to replace it with a watch the next episode thing. And it's going to be kind of not quite an algorithmically generated list. It's a curated human list, but it's been processed. It's been massaged a little bit by my knowledge of what this user has watched or not. And they just, you know, they're not doing any of that. It is the simplest, most, you know, the most basic kind of list. And I value that, but on, you know, on a Wednesday night when I'm turning on the TV looking for something to watch, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'm not flipping around for Discovery. I just want to watch the show. I just want to watch my next episode of the show that I've been watching. That's it.
It's funny because on the one hand, it's like, it seems like lazy because it's, you know, just sort of putting, like, not doing the work to fold in all the information it has about you. But on the other hand, somebody had to make those lists. So it's not lazy. It's just, why did you make the work over there rather than the work over here? And I don't know, that's kind of baffling to me.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, you know, to your point about the human's fine. Searching for things.
It's the rest
of
it.
Oh, yeah. Fine. Yeah, exactly. I just don't know why you made that choice. Why did you make that choice to do that instead of do this?
We have a friend who does this job for a different streaming platform. You
know, sure. Which is, you know, I don't begrudge you using a person to create those curated lists. I think in some cases it's much better than algorithms. That said, yeah, I don't know why you didn't spend the time to do this. Yeah, and to your point about flipping through stuff for Discovery, like this went out with like the 1990s or 2000s with like, oh, I'm just going to sit down and channel surf, right? Like, I don't want to do that. I've spent the hour flipping through Netflix trying to decide what to watch, and it's just like, no, that's not great. If
I want to do that, you guys doing a curated list that I'm not going to see anywhere else, because every other list is going to be curated by the service itself. The Apple list is curating from all the services that are part of the TV app, basically, so not Netflix. I don't think they promote things on Netflix, although they might, for all I know. They're just not in Up Next. I will use that if I want to, but playing hide your shows that you're watching is just such a frustrating user hostile thing. And I understand why somebody like Netflix does it, because they're really trying to decrease churn by getting you hooked on more and more shows so you don't leave their platform. But Apple has to answer to a higher authority as a platform owner that's trying to unify this platform. I hope they change their mind. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
What else is you wrote about photos?
I did write about photos.
I'm finishing my photo book this week, so I've been knee deep in photos this week too. So I thought it was funny. It was like, oh look, Dan wrote about a photos feature.
Photo content, an old photo feature though.
It is.
That's the thing. Like
it's not the oldest, but oldish. Yeah.
No, but it's not the new. Everyone's talking about shared libraries, which is the new big thing, and this is shared albums, which has been around for several years. I mean, I remember back it was like a shared photo streams for a while, right? Like,
yeah. This is way back when. This is a different feature from that, but it is, yes. This is, they added, I don't know, 4 years ago, something like that, 5 years ago, this shared photo, shared album that's got like social features in it, and you can view it on a web page and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for me, you know, I came at this from the perspective of somebody who's got a new kid, and I didn't want to splash that kid all over social media for many obvious reasons, some of which is, I mean, you just look at what's happening on Twitter right now. For another reason, privacy concerns. I have a large enough following that it's just, I feel weird about it. If I were just sharing it with, like, you know, a small group of curated people or whatever, that, like, on those social media networks, fine. But also, like, just the feeling that, like, once you start uploading stuff, you can't undo that, right? You can't put the genie back in the bottle once you've got stuff on social media. So I have basically, when I do post on social media, I take advantage of our pal Casey Liss's excellent Masquerade, which is a little iOS app that lets you pop emojis over faces to maintain privacy. That's been very handy for the occasions where I do post stuff on Instagram and Twitter. But obviously, it doesn't solve the problem for, like, well, I've got my parents, my wife's parents, and then some other family members who are, you know, far-flung and would like to see pictures of a baby. And so in order to deal with that, we made a shared photo album, and we invited them all to it, and it's been great. Because I actually, my aunt and two of my uncles were visiting the other week, and they are on the photo stream, and they were like, this is the highlight of our day. We love seeing the pictures. And it felt really good to be able to be like, oh, it's really nice that, like, even my, you know, perhaps not the most technologically savvy relatives were able to, you know, get this all running. And they get a little notification when there's a new picture that we post. And they get to look at it. And they can comment on it and like it and all that stuff. And that's great. So it's been a really kind of pleasant, you know, as I describe it in the piece, an antidote to social media. Because I know exactly who is on it. No, we don't have to worry about random people popping in and commenting about, you know, the pictures that we've posted. There's no noise. It's just for this one specific purpose. And it feels really good because it's this, it's like I said, it's purpose built. It's really designed to do one thing and it does that thing pretty well. It's not to say there aren't, you know, room for improvement. I'll talk a little bit about some of the things that I think Apple could do better there. And as always, as we've talked about with other features, always sort of a question of whether or not Apple has any interest in continuing to update a feature that's several years old. You never know. They might or they might not. Depends how the whim strike them. But for the moment, it's been really great in terms of being able to share photos with a handful of people and family members and stuff like that. And yeah, I think it's a feature that a lot of people don't really think about because, as you said, it's been there for several years, but it often isn't really top of mind.
Right.
So, you know, it's something that I feel like I was thinking about, I was like, oh, this is the perfect solution to this problem. So it's nice that that feature is already there, and I decided to show it some love.
Yeah, it's a good little feature. It really is. It is meant to be a replacement for social media that is for essentially a private group of people. And, you know, I find I have not used it, I think, as well as you have, but I have used it. We did that for a wedding that a bunch of us went to, the Mike Curley's wedding. We had a little shared album for that people dropped stuff in for a while the wedding was going on. That was kind of fun.
And Apple's done other features that it's tried to supplant that a little bit, right? Where, because now it does the thing where it's like, oh, we noticed you took pictures at a place near this other contact of yours who was also taking pictures. Maybe you want to share pictures with them. So, like, you know, and Apple, I think, has tried, for what it's worth, between all these features, shared libraries, shared albums, et cetera, to like try and encourage photo sharing a little bit more, and they're doing it in kind of a peer-to-peer fashion rather than via a social media network, because Apple is not in the business of making social media networks and has no interest in that. And so, you know, I think most of those features work pretty well. I'm sometimes perplexed by the choices in the shared with you idea. Like, maybe you want to share this. We went to visit my parents and we dropped the kid off with them for like an hour so my wife and I could go have lunch, and I, you know, they took a picture of us while we were out at lunch, and it's like, maybe you want to share this with your dad, and I was like, my dad doesn't care about the fact that I was at lunch, because I took other pictures of the kid at the same time and I was near him, and etc. So it's like, it's not always perfect, but you know, it's an algorithm and that's what you kind of expect from it,
but it is trying to get those things out of your photo library and into the hands of others. There are also the different ones of, like, you want to see these pictures versus you want to keep these pictures. So, like, the shared albums, the quality is capped. But if you do from iOS, if you do a bunch of shared images to somebody, that is via iCloud to transfer into their library, and that's full quality. But that's not a stream of images. That's a, here, have these pictures. So there's different kinds of sharing, right? There's the, you want these pictures to keep for yourself, right? And there's, you want to look at this picture. And those are different. So, or could be in some circumstances different. And then, yeah, you were also really right to point out that what's different about the shared album thing is that it does have those very lightweight sort of social features on there. So you can create this tiny social network just for that photo stream, essentially. That's a good idea. That's a good feature, too. Whereas the iCloud Shared Photos feature that's new this year is, I think Apple doesn't want to put a label on it for good reason, because there are probably use cases they're not thinking of, but that is a feature for families. That's essentially a feature for families, that you are going to have the parents, or partners, and they're gonna share most or all photos with each other, and then you're gonna have maybe grandparents or kids or whatever else, some other members who might contribute some stuff occasionally when they're together. And like that's the concept it's built around. And that is a very specific concept. I think it's actually a common concept and a common request, and it's good that they have it, but you know, that's what that's for. And that's why there's only one too. It's like they want it to be a really serious, I think, serious connection, because you're not going to be like turning them on and off and on and off at a whim. It's much more deep down than that to share all your photos with somebody.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I didn't want to do it in this particular situation, because it's not like I want to have, you know, say my parents and my wife's parents all in the shared photo library. That doesn't get me anything.
No, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, exactly.
No, there's another level there. Well, I was glad you wrote about that. That was fun to see. While I'm thinking, I got photos on the brain here.
Photos on the brain.
So many. Oh my God. Well, and it's the what is. The good thing about waiting, because it happened so late in the process that I've been writing about shared iCloud shared photos late in the game because it didn't show up for a while, is now that it's shipped, I've also seen a bunch of questions from people about it, and that's been really good because I'm like, oh, I could answer that question in the book. That would be good. And one of the ones that I thought was really interesting was I got a question from somebody about how they expected that albums would be shared, and they're not. The items right, in your library are shared, but there's no album syncing, nor is there the concept of creating an album and letting multiple people. It's actually a good feature request that they probably should do in the future, is if you're in a shared library with somebody, you should be able to create a shared album that contains only pictures in the shared library, right? Like there should be a mechanism for doing that, and that album syncs so that people can like contribute to an album and curate an album together. But they didn't do that. That's not what this is.
Yeah,
it's right. It's just
weird too,
the
because
images.
That has some overlap with shared albums, right? Which so it gets right. A little weird because it's like, well, that's a shared album, but not a shared library shared
right.
Album or something.
Yeah,
so.
It is. Right, and it's complicated. So, and I can see why they're like, well, we're not touching that right now. That's not
yeah,
what we're
right. Right. This is too complex. We'll get back to
what
this.
We're doing. Let's see. I didn't work on the book on Wednesday, which allowed me to write a bunch of things on Six Colors, which was great. It will be good when this book is out the door. I did my charts thing, which I looked up. Mm-hmm. So the annual charts, because the fiscal year is over for Apple. And so I looked up when I did it the previous year, because I thought, oh, yeah, I need to do that annual charts thing. And I didn't do it last week when they came out with the results and things got a little busy. But now it's Wednesday and I'm going to do it. And I looked up when I did it last year. And it was, by the time I finished the story, it was a year ago to the hour. It was November 2nd last year and November 2nd this year that I wrote that story. Anyway, it's a fun
story.
Was
it the same? Did they do their results on the same day?
There might have been a day different. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. November 2nd, apparently, at 2 p.m. is when.
There you go. That's the time. The clock chimes and the charts are posted.
And the charts must be posted then, yeah. So it's. You know, essentially, it's just kind of interesting to watch the Apple's growth over time. And I have annual revenue going back, you know, I a long way. So seeing Apple going from kind of like bobbing around in the 6 millions and then just starting to lift off and then explode in the 2010s and then explode again in 2021, 22. And that was the biggest takeaway I really had from it is usually when Apple takes a big leap forward, they slide back the next year because you can't maintain. And they didn't slide back this year. They went up, and that is remarkable because usually the years they take the big stride forward are followed by the year that they take a step back, and then they begin to go forward again. And lately it's been based on the iPhone body change, right, basically. And that's the other thing I noticed here is that they took a big jump up with a new iPhone design. And they haven't taken a step back this time, which is also interesting. So I don't know what the future holds, but I thought that was interesting that they took a big leap and then topped it which is not what I expected. And of course, the other story that I walked away from those charts with is the really is the Mac, which is just kind of unbelievable. The Mac spent a whole decade in the 20s billion, and last year they were 35, and this year they're 40. So like a whole decade in the 20s and 1 year in the 30s. It's wild stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, sometimes there's a big jump, right? And it's a, yeah, what a weird, again, what a weird thing for a product line that is, what, approaching 40 years old?
Yeah.
Wild. And I'm glad to hear it.
And if there's one chart that you look at in that whole list, which is silly because you should look at them all,
you're already charts
on the page. But if you can only view one chart, scroll to the bottom, because I always like, this is the perspective chart, which is, it's a super tall chart that shows you how much more money the iPhone makes than any of Apple's other products. And I feel like it's worth putting it in that context every so often, maybe every year. About like we look at these charts and they look similar because I changed the scale on each of them, because otherwise, as you can see with this last chart, otherwise the charts would be useless of the products that aren't the iPhone, because the iPhone is just at a totally different scale than the rest of them. Although service is now like in this void between all the other products and the iPhone, which is kind of interesting. But the iPhone is just, like, let's just not forget, the iPhone is the most important thing by far. Over $200 billion dollars in revenue. Yeah, that's a lot. For those who don't know, that's a lot of money.
You know, a preview for my Macworld column next week, in which I go a little bit long and maybe have a slight rant, which is a combination of kind of stuff that we're talking about. I think you could kind of fold in that... Apple TV change from earlier, along with you know, the amount of the recent financial results as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say, I basically go in on a bit of a screed about Apple making decisions that are you know, purely financially motivated, and where sort of those. What that's rooted in? What are the factors that makes Apple make those decisions that are the ones that, you know, come across as unpopular? Whether it's App Store stuff or advertising stuff more recently. And I know you and Mike talked a little bit about this on Upgrade, and I kind of folded in some of your commentary there as well, because you talked a bit about Steve Jobs's attitude of like, we nobody should be making money off our stuff like without giving us a cut, basically. And I think that is one part of it. And so part of it is also, I talk a bit about the, you know, Apple, their near-death experience in the 90s, I think, being sort of the equivalent of a trauma for that corporation, where they like now have this Scarlett O'Hara sort of like, God is my witness, we'll never go hungry again attitude, which has meant like hoarding a lot of money. And you know, the fact that they make $100 billion in profit in a year, which is larger than the GDP of... I looked this up, well over half the countries in the world, is kind of wild, right? Like, that is actually insane. It is something that is hard to wrap your head around. And the sort of last element of this being the environment in which we find ourselves, in which growth is prized over all else, which is, you know, kind of disturbing the more you think about it. I kind of liken it in the piece to the idea that you have this huge, elaborate feast piled on your Thanksgiving table, say, and like more food than anybody could ever eat in a lifetime. And everybody's demanding that next year's spread be even more lavish.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there going, why though? Like, what is the point? It's just
the growth.
It feels like gluttony. Yeah. But it's gluttony, not just growth, right? That's the thing. Growth, mm-hmm. Yes, but a growth at all costs, growth with no other sort of, you know, no other aspect to it other than just more, which I feel is a little disturbing. So I don't know. I guess this probably ended mm-hmm. turned into a bit of an anti-capitalist screed by the end of it, which is a weird position for
well, as long as the check clears.
That's right. Yeah, well, we're all good capitalists here. Anyways, but I think it is an interesting, as we watch Apple continue to make more and more and more money, is there an end to that? I don't know. You can't grow forever in theory.
Yeah, you can.
In theory. But, you know, I mean, Meta has seen that mm-hmm. become a problem.
Well,
And
I think if I had to drill down into, like, what the real problem with Apple is right now, it's that they are being pressured by, you know, Wall Street, essentially, to grow, which is fine as far as it goes. But that what's happening is they are pursuing angles of growth that I would argue degrade their product, and that in the long run it will hamper them more than it will help them. That's why I keep having flashbacks to my time in the corporate media world. That, you know, it was an endless parade of, well, we'll just do this thing and we get more money and there's no harm in it. And there was absolutely harm in almost all of those deals that they were making. It's just that it was incremental harm, and nobody was there to say, we have to stop the incremental harm. And I feel like that is the kind of core problem at Apple right now, is that for whatever reason, the people who are in charge of the user experience, who used to have the power and voice to say, this is too much, no longer are being listened to. And that is dangerous, I think, because it makes not only, okay, short term, it makes the product worse. And I know there are people who are going to be like, yeah, but not that much worse, and they make more money. Like, okay, that's who's winning right now. Is it? Yeah, it makes it worse, but not that much worse, and most people won't care, and it makes us more money. But in the long run, making the product worse will make you less successful as a company, because you will make the product so much worse that you've lost, in case of Apple, your entire brand promise, and you can never get it back.
It's the trust erosion, and I actually linked to, there was a thread on Twitter about this too, for obvious reasons on Twitter.
Trust thermoclime, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is, you know, Twitter is learning that in real time. Mm-hmm. And I think Apple, especially because Tim Cook loves to talk about customer satisfaction, right? He is so jazzed about that. And you kind of feel like, I don't know that those surveys always accurately, you know, reflect what people are satisfied or dissatisfied about, because, you know, they're very focused on purchasing and buying and like hardware products, I think. Whereas I think a lot of the dissatisfaction for Apple comes in its software these days and its services. And so I'm not sure how much of that is accurately captured by, you know, the kind of figures that Tim Cook likes to trot out. But, you know, if people are upset enough about it and start complaining, that'll surely ding it. And I don't think Apple likes the optics of having people sitting around complaining about their things not working right or their trust being violated, and they shouldn't. I mean, you know,
I wonder
that's they should be responding to that.
I wonder how much of this erosion is due to the same forces that sort of corrupted the App Store, where there is this feeling like, and I'm not just talking about the App Store stuff that we debate now, but like in the earlier days of the App Store, there were a lot of complaints about how bad the App Store was. And about how App Store rejections didn't make any sense, and like, and a lot of that's gotten cleaned up over the years since Phil Schiller basically was put in charge of it instead of Eddie Q. It actually was worse in a lot of ways before, if people don't remember. But the argument was always, we're making so much money. Like, what I always say is the John Madden line, which is winning is a great deodorant, which is like, we're making money, so nothing, so we must be great at our jobs. And the truth is that just because you're making money and being really successful does not mean you're good at your job. And so many, I think, ills in our world are due to the people who succeeded because of luck, thinking they did it because of skill. And not that they're not skillful, because some of them are skillful. I'm just saying some of them aren't skillful, and it doesn't matter. Success doesn't always happen because you are a special flower, right? Success is complicated, and sometimes luck is involved, and that's just how it is. But I think, like, in that App Store era, I very much felt like all of our complaints about, like, the App Store needs to be better, the answer was, yeah, but we're so popular and successful and make so much money, it doesn't matter. This feels like the same kind of argument. And I did absolutely have that moment yesterday where I thought, Tim, this is not going to be good for the customer sat. Right? The customers are not sat right now. So I don't know. But you're also right. Like, what are they measuring when they're measuring customer satisfaction? Like, hey, you like that iPad a week in? And you're like, yeah, it's great. And then that's it. 99%. It's great. Customer sat. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. somebody was quoting something on Twitter earlier today. I can't find the actual thing, but it was a point about War and Peace and a line that stuck in their head about some character dying. And their last thought being, how could this happen to me, who everybody liked? And I think about that in some ways of like the eventual demise of, you know, if Apple ever actually gets a real ding about this, you sit there wondering, are they just going to be puzzled and be like, but we made so much money.
Yeah.
For that, as that comic goes, for that brief instant, we created so much shareholder value, you know? Like, I fold in the other thing, which I thought was really interesting about that. I don't know if you remember this, several years back, I want to say about 2019 or so, before the pandemic, Apple signed on with a bunch of other businesses to this statement about how we should prioritize things other than creating shareholder value. This was like a big business consortium thing. There were like 200 companies signed on to this idea. Like, look, we need to consider things other than just pure shareholder value. We need to consider like environmental responsibility and social inequality and all this stuff that was actually like good stuff. And, you know, I had this brief moment of feeling like, oh, maybe they're getting it. And it just feels like, nope, that was just talk. I mean, Apple does a lot of stuff, environmental, social. I think all of that is good. It sometimes feels a little bit, especially the social stuff sometimes feels a little bit weak when you consider like, hey, it's like, oh, we gave like $1 million to this program. And it's like, you made $100 billion in profit.
Yeah.
Like, you gave them a quarter?
It is there. It's, you know, it's a challenge to navigate it. And I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying that.
No,
that the last few weeks have shown us, I think, that it looks from the outside, at least, like there are some misaligned priorities. And my spider sense goes off because I was once the product champion.
Sure.
Who was in there with. And let me tell you, Dan, because you weren't in a lot of those meetings, I will tell you, it is difficult to be the one person in the room who says this is a bad idea when a salesperson rolls in and says, you know, I know our company is struggling, but I've got $75,000 here we can take.
Yeah.
It is very difficult to say we shouldn't take that money. And that was the position I was in. But the thing is, you have to have a person who's concerned about the product. You do need somebody in charge who is looking at the big picture of like this business needs to be successful. But I would argue that those don't apply in the case of Apple to the degree that they applied in the case of IDG back in the day. But it's the same point, which is who's your product champion and who's empowered to say this is bad for the overall big picture of the company. Yes,
right.
I know it will bring us more money or whatever, or increased engagement or whatever your metric is, but that you're frustrating the users to do it. It's not what they want. It's what we need. And the more we prioritize our need over what they want, the worse our product gets. And I think that argument used to hold sway more at Apple than it clearly does today. I think that's the problem.
Yeah, I think that's true as well. I mean, and the part of it is like, not quite law of large numbers, but when you get to the point where you're that big, it is, I imagine, very hard to move the needle in terms of especially trying to convince people that qualitative feedback can trump quantitative feedback, right? When it comes to like, well, I've got hard numbers that tell me, like you said, we're going to make X million dollars on this.
Yeah.
And somebody's like, yeah, but I don't feel great about it, right? Like, and you know, you can't, it's hard to balance those two things when it's like, yeah, I think this will be bad. My gut is telling me this will be bad and people will dislike it. And
yeah,
in the long term, it will hurt us more. But I can't give you a number. I can't tell you we will lose 25% of our users because we make this decision. And that's a tough sell, right? Like, especially
right,
when the people in charge have to be concerned about that bottom line. And again, that is the function of the society in which we live to a large degree, right? Like, it's hard to change the rules of that and be like, you know... people still need money.
So what you get is the outcry and the criticism, and that's something that Apple absolutely reacts to. And so the way that person who says no, we should put ads on all the user on the pages and have them not be filtered and it'll make us a lot of money, and somebody undoubtedly said that's a bad idea, and then somebody in a position of authority said no, we're doing it, and then it was a PR disaster for Apple. That is a little tick mark somewhere, hopefully, where they're like, oh, I shouldn't have listened to that guy.
Right.
And that the next time they don't listen to that guy. And similarly with this Apple TV thing, like, it's a little thing, but enough people have complained about it, I think inside and out at Apple, that whoever said, oh, it's fine, let's do it, and gave that person the authority to do it is now like, okay, I should not have given that person that authority. And then you hope the pendulum just swings a little bit more away from the people who have done these things that are hostile, where everybody on the outside is sort of like pushing back and being annoying because they're like, it's not, I made this decision sort of in a vacuum and I thought it wouldn't be a big deal, and that this guy was just complaining this over here.
Yeah.
They were just belly aching about this. And it's like, oh no, they actually made a point. I should probably listen to them. They anticipated this and I didn't listen, and now we're getting yelled at. Whoops.
Wow. Now someone will tell Elon.
Well, with that, let's wrap it up. You know, we'll be back next week with more of whatever. In November, they're done with their product line, I guess. So we'll figure something out.
Yes.
There's always something. I mean, who knew this week was going to happen the way it did, but it did. But thank you for being a supporter of Six Colors. We appreciate you and we appreciate your support. And we'll see you next week. Until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.